So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
From inside a sun burns a fury, driven by the anger, haunted by the images.
I'm here. Welcome to Review Away. It's John Volek and Wei Ting. Mm-hmm. And Wei, despite what this door might represent, there is no way out of this show for you.
Oh, I'm stuck. I'm chambered.
You're going to be chambered twice.
Yeah.
Like Edge.
Yeah.
To different levels of success. We're going to get right into this show, Mr. Ting, because this was only, I say only, 8 years ago. But I watched so much on this show, and I was watching as if this was today, where it's like, I don't know what's about to happen. I remembered, man, like, so little of some of this. All I remember from this show is Shane, and my memory stood corrected here.
I'm pretty sure I watched the show, too, like, because I would have been working at the law at the time.
Were you still doing it in 2009?
Wasn't I?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I have no recollection of the show.
You know what? We were on Sirius at that point, so maybe you had just finished up your law run. I think it would have been right around this time. I think we moved to Sirius in January of 2009,
and this is when we started the podcast. I guess
this is when we started. Yeah, Ask Away, right. I believe. Yeah, it would have been in its infancy. The lost episodes.
Yes, yes.
But we will not get into all of that. No Way Out is what is going to be our focus today. From Sunday, February 15th of 1999. What better way? What a better weekend, Way? Take your lovely wife or significant other out for Valentine's Day. Come back and get ready for No Way Out on Sunday night.
Or you could take your significant other to No Way Out for Valentine's.
As I'm sure many Seattle, Washington natives did.
Yeah.
Here in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
11,200 paid, Way, for the opportunity to see these two chamber matches and Randy Orton running into the barrier that is Shane McMahon on his road to WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
What a pit stop this was. And this immediately gained my attention because of this video that kicked off the show. Built around Superman, Shane McMahon, from the perspective of Shane and the haunted images with Randy kicking Vince McMahon in the head and says, tonight, the legend killer becomes the hunted as the sun becomes Avenger.
Yeah, the Avenger. Wow. The Avenger, Shane McMahon.
As much as you can complain about Shane, and believe me, in the next few weeks, I'm sure that will ramp up. This, it's nothing compared to where this was in 2009. This guy was set up as like the conquering hero, the muscle of the McMahon family coming to right the wrongs committed by Randy Orton. And I'll say Shane looks in significantly more intimidating shape today than he did in 2009.
Oh, he gained a brand new body, it seems.
Yes.
At this point. But it, as ridiculous as it all is,
I got sucked in, didn't you?
I think they did a great job with Shane McMahon here. I mean, if they put this type of promotional power behind anybody in that company, I feel like a lot of people would be able to have different careers. But they did a great job with Shane here.
Imagine if Mr. Kennedy had actually become the McMahon's bastard child.
He was the event.
He would have been this guy.
Mm.
His career would have been made.
Oh, yeah.
He would have got all the Shane spots. He did not.
Doing the coast to coast and the elbow drop. You think he would have done that?
Yeah, probably.
Hmm.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. Who knows?
I mean, he would have been given all of these. Like, you would have figured he would have been the guy to stand up for his father, Vince.
The fact that, though, Shane is legitimately Vince's child makes it a whole lot more believable, doesn't it?
Yeah, until Mr. Kennedy eliminated the son. Took him out. This wasn't too far until Shane left the company.
Hmm.
This was kind of his swan song program.
So can you just go through the storyline one more time?
So this had been building up between Randy and Vince, and Randy was just – he was really growing as a heel. He had returned to television, and this is where he had got in ridiculous shape. Not that he was in bad shape before, but he just came in – Ripped to shit. That's what happened to his angle. It got sent to shit. This is where he got all like inked up. He got the sleeves.
The sleeves, yeah.
It felt like a new Randy Orton.
See, he was actually bulkier before.
Yes.
He was more jacked.
Here he was like more shredded.
More streamlined, more toned, and definitely a better look for him.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, I thought so. I just felt it felt like a new version of Randy Orton.
Hmm.
And the big angle was on the Raw going into the Royal Rumble where he punted Vince in the head. And this was a huge angle. And Randy just felt like he was the top heel in the company after that angle. So he goes in, he wins the Royal Rumble, all of this momentum. And unfortunately, we had a February pay-per-view and Shane McMahon had to come to his father's rescue. And I mean, on paper, you explain this story. Randy Orton kicks this overaged Vince McMahon in the head. The son comes for revenge. The son loses. And then it's Hunter, the real bully of the family to deal with Randy for the WrestleMania program.
Makes sense.
That sounds fine on paper.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Shane McMahon is Shane McMahon. And they booked him as though he was just Randy's equal.
Hmm.
And I think that that really did a number on Randy. And then, as we may get into over the next few weeks, Way, they did a number with Hunter and Randy and building up that match for WrestleMania. It was all backwards, which will start from their decision of how they built this matchup.
Okay, great. So we'll be chatting about that match. And what else is on tonight's card?
We have not one, but two Elimination Chamber matches because this was in the midst of the brand split where, yes, there was talent that would show up on other shows, but we still did have the designation of Raw and SmackDown at this point where Raw was run by Stephanie McMahon and SmackDown was run by Vicky Guerrero. And
gotcha.
Vicky was aligned with Edge and Stephanie was a babyface at this point. Feuding the McMahon family was feuding with the Ortons.
Do you know who the writers were at the time?
Oh, 2009. Well, you would have had Michael Hayes in the mix. Brian Gewirtz would have been the key. Ed Koski has been a mainstay there. Dave Kapoor, I believe, would have been there. I feel those would have been the main ones.
Were there distinct writing teams for?
From my understanding, there was. I think so.
Even up until then.
Yeah, I think at this point you still had the separate teams in place, but ultimately it was still Vince McMahon was the where it all ended with. So two chamber matches with titles being defended, unlike past years where this had been to create contenders. Mm-hmm. This year they were going to do title defenses. So you had the Royal Rumble winner who we knew would face the winner of one of the chamber matches because Orton was on Raw at this time. But this year they really wanted you guessing right up until the last minute as to what are going to be the big programs for WrestleMania. So going into this show, I mean, you kind of had hints of where things were going, but there were going to be dramatic changes from No Way Out on that would cement everything in place. Mm-hmm. You didn't know where anything was going. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of making No Way Out somewhat of an important show, but you were sacrificing long-term build where that's the positive and the negative, right? Like everyone today can probably guess the WrestleMania card and not even have to necessarily rely on reports that have come out. You can look at the television and see logical places where some matches are going. That was not so much the case I found in 2009. And one other note was this was the week before the Academy Awards where Mickey Rourke was up for Best Actor for The Wrestler, and they had done the deal with Jericho and Mickey Rourke on CNN, where Jericho cut this promo that was so effective that Mickey Rourke believed that Jericho wanted to like shoot on him or was serious about this, when Jericho was just cutting a promo with the idea that they were trying to build to a match with Jericho and Mickey Rourke. So at this time, that's where the One Direction was hoping to go with Jericho and Mickey Rourke.
Gotcha.
Are we all up to speed?
Well,
and Shawn Michaels is near bankruptcy.
Yes. That's the only other thing I was curious about.
The announcers were Jim Ross and Taz on SmackDown. Mm-hmm. I had forgotten. This was after the infamous draft where Jim Ross was surprisingly drafted to SmackDown. And he was paired with Taz, who was going to wrap up with the WWE at WrestleMania that year and then would head on over to TNA. And then on Raw, we had Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler. And I will say it was somewhat jarring to have two-man announce teams.
A little bit.
It's weird, isn't
it?
Yeah,
a little bit.
To watch a WWE broadcast now and you're only hearing two voices?
Yeah, I'm used to seven.
My brain is not programmed for just two voices. I have multiple channels ready for different voice tones. So to start off the match, the show rather, is The Undertaker, who opens up the show, coming out for the Elimination Chamber. This is the SmackDown Chamber, where the WWE title would be defended by Edge against The Undertaker, Big Show, Vladimir Kozlov, Triple H, and Jeff Hardy.
Yes.
One of the – maybe the only time The Undertaker has opened up a pay-per-view.
Interesting.
I would have to guess. Ross describes Triple H as Neanderthal-like as he gets into the face of Big Show in his pod, his Lexon pod, as it was called. Hardy had been coming off a one-month title reign as champion. He was super popular here, and it was Edge and Jeff Hardy that started the match.
Man, Jeff came out looking sunburnt. He was like a nice shade of almost velvet.
Yeah, he was, I guess maybe getting ready for his WrestleMania tan. I wonder if this was spray on or not.
I don't know.
So Edge and Jeff start the match. There were such loud chants for Hardy and giant boos for Edge. This crowd was just in love with Jeff Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
Man, was he popular here. Hardy hit a twist of fate and then missed a swanton, and Edge sets up for a spear, and it gets countered with an inside cradle, and Hardy pins Edge in 3 minutes, which guarantees a new champion will be crowned. Quite the way to kick off the show and this match immediately.
Yeah, I thought so. And added importance to all of the basically the rest of the match afterwards.
Yeah, this was a Paul Heyman idea for that Elimination Chamber they did for the December to Dismember, where they wanted to have the champion beaten immediately to set up that a new champion will be crowned.
Right.
And they followed it with this here. And I like this. I mean, this was a real surprise reaction. And for the next 30 minutes or so, you knew you were going to get...
It's a concept that's been used in the past. Like, I remember, like, Taz's last show in ECW, it was a triple threat. And he got pinned first.
Yes, you're right.
So, yeah.
So the next entrant to follow up on that momentum was Vladimir Kozlov.
Oh, man.
who had about 3 months where he was a pushed character, even beating The Undertaker on TV. And this would be one of those 3 months for Vladimir Kozlov.
In both of these chamber matches, there happened to be one kind of pet project guy that seemed in hindsight really out of place amongst these other names.
Yeah. This, to me, further heightened my appreciation of Braun Strowman.
Sure.
Because he could have easily become a Vladimir Kozlov. Mm-hmm. And I think we're at a point where we can say this guy is not going to be Vladimir Kozlov.
Nor Mike Knox.
No. Oh, my God. Those two could be brothers.
Yeah.
It was jarring, the look, the similarity. Hardy just bumped around, which was the smart way to go. It was just all Hardy selling. Ross notes that Kozlov has never lost in a one-on-one situation. Kozlov applied a body lock. It's all Kozlov offense. He even did a running power slam, but it got stopped as Hardy drop-kicked him into the corner, and Kozlov stumbled into the corner from this and then hits a whisper in the wind as the clock appears. Our fourth entrant is the Big Show, which led to Show and Big Show working over Hardy. And
Show and Kozlov.
Yeah, Show and Kozlov working over Hardy. And Hardy tries to fight back, and Jim Ross refers to the chamber as a 10-ton solid steel bully, which I guess is what the chamber would be identified of if it had like a eHarmony description. A 10-ton solid steel bully.
eHarmony? Oh, like if it had a dating profile?
If the chamber were personalized.
Okay.
That's what I took Jim Ross to be trying to add context to here.
Gotcha. Kozlov and Big Show basically take turns trying to one-up each other by taking turns attacking Jeff. And this whole 5 minutes was actually really slow and actually quite boring. But the crowd was definitely into it because Jeff, I think, played such a great underdog.
I think Seattle has risen in my opinion of certain crowds from watching this show this week and hearing that crowd. For granted, it was Daniel Bryan, but also how
– oh, they were hot for the whole show.
They were hot for a lot on that show.
Including 205 Live.
Oh, for Perkins and Gallagher at the end. I mean, Seattle, they get a thumbs up from me this week, both for their actions this week and from 8 years ago.
And for their coffee.
You can't go wrong even though – oh, yeah. You've got Starbucks.
Pike Place.
There you have it. I'm back to – reliable Tim Hortons.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. I wrote here, Kozlov and Show have tremendous brawl as countdown clock hits. That can't possibly be true. I must have been sarcastic writing that, right?
I don't know.
Okay. You didn't notice any fantastic brawling?
I certainly did not notice.
I'm reading this. I'm like, that can't be true.
I certainly did not notice anything tremendous with these two leading the 5 minutes.
The fifth entrant was Triple H, who goes after the Big Show right away. Hunter hit a spinebuster to Show, takes out Hardy with a clothesline, and delivered a pedigree to Kozlov on the steel floor, or went for one, but Big Show stopped him with a chop, which made little sense. Why would you be saving a guy in this?
Yeah.
Unless you saw an opening to chop him?
Well, I guess if you saw an opening to defeat somebody that you felt was tougher to defeat, whatever.
Anyway. Kozlov ran his head into the pod and bounced off of it. The crowd is chanting for the Undertaker as they await the countdown. And then the Big Show splashed Hunter against the fence and rammed Hardy into Hunter and missed the splash to both and went down. So the Undertaker is the last one in, which comes at the 20-minute mark of the match. And the door doesn't open right away, which it's always hit and miss with these doors. And he just starts kicking away at it and it finally opens. And he just ran wild, hit snake eyes and running boot to Kozlov. Really just hustled here on everybody.
Yeah, this was a Taker working at some of his fastest. And he was essentially hot tagged by the clock.
Yes. Big Show stopped an Undertaker double chokeslam to Hardy and Hunter. And then this was the second time Big Show made a big save. Taker then hit a DDT to Show on the steel floor as Ross describes his brain matter spilling on the floor. His brain matter. Kozlov was so clumsy here with this shove as Taker just tripped, falling backward, and then hit a last ride out of the corner, and Kozlov was thankfully removed from this match.
Do you think it's, you know, it's a case of like too much too soon to put a guy like Kozlov in here with like veterans like the others?
I would say yes. This guy was just, he was not very coordinated to begin with. I mean, he was first introduced to the WWF in 2005. This was the story where Jerry Jarrett took him to WWE headquarters and led to the falling out with Jerry and Jeff. So, I mean, they were aware of this guy from 05, and this was 2009. And, I mean, this was just one of their latest monsters. But, I mean, he was one that it was, to me, pretty quick where I had no benefit of the doubt on this one. I was just – I just didn't see this guy going much. His real high point was doing comedy segments with Santino. I mean, he was in a long line of guys. They started off with the monster push that ended up as comedy figures. So he's out. Big Show choke slams The Undertaker and then back body drops Hunter onto the steel. Hardy climbs to the top of the pod but gets crotched from below by Big Show, and then Show climbs and gets caught by Taker with a superplex.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter then hits a pedigree to Show, sets up Hardy with a swanton off the pod, and the crowd just erupts after he hits it. Hunter rolls his arm onto the Big Show and eliminates him. So it's down to Hunter, The Undertaker, and Jeff Hardy. And this is where the match got really strong with, you know, your three key guys at the end here. Hunter crotched Taker as he went for the old school. There was a poetry in motion off The Undertaker's back onto Hunter on the steel. And then Taker flips Hardy back into the ring, into the tombstone, and eliminates Jeff Hardy at 28:33. I think they picked the right guy if you were going to eliminate Hardy, but man, this took the crowd down. Jeff Hardy was the favorite in this match. I think even more so than The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Hunter and The Undertaker, and Jim Ross updated the profile and referred to the chamber as Satan's vacation house in hell.
Wow.
Now, if Satan were to go on a vacation, would he stay in hell? Would he have a vacation home in hell? Can he not leave hell? Would he not want to venture elsewhere?
Is hell not?
It is hell.
Yeah, but
is it hell for him?
Wait, but is hell not like really big? You know, there must be a Hawaii of hell.
I'm sure there's multiple time zones in hell. I mean, you can travel places in hell.
Yeah.
But hell is just so encompassing. I mean, by definition, it's like,
can Satan? I guess Satan can go anywhere except heaven, right?
So he would have his compound in hell, and he would have his vacation home in hell, which would be this structure. Like, this is a shitty vacation, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, it's hell.
Was Jim Ross subliminally calling Seattle hell?
He was talking about the structure primarily.
What would happen if
I hear Seattle's very nice.
It rains a lot. Would it rain in hell?
It would rain acid rain, I guess.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, we continued on in Satan's vacation house in hell. Taker missed a running boot into the corner and then caught Hunter coming off the top and hit a chokeslam for a near fall. Crowd was chanting back and forth. Taker stopped a pedigree and catapulted Hunter into the fence. They flip over into the ring, and it ends in a tombstone delivered to Hunter, but Hunter gets his foot on the bottom rope for a gigantic reaction. Hunter then gets up, hits a pedigree. I thought this was too quick after the tombstone. He had just taken this, and then all of a sudden we got a replay, and this guy's on his feet hitting a pedigree. Fans booed, and then Taker kicked out of the pedigree. There's punches in the corner. Taker goes for a last ride, and it's blocked with Hunter landing on his feet. He hits another pedigree, and this time he pins The Undertaker at the 36-minute mark to become, wait for it, a 13-time champion. And Triple H reigns supreme in the Elimination Chamber.
What's his current reign?
14, I think. I think he's
kind of neck and neck.
I'm the wrong person to ask on title lengths.
Well, if he was already 13 here, I could definitely buy.
I think he only won the one last year in the Rumble. I think that's the only time he had the title since.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, folks.
Right. Yeah. I thought overall it was a good match, thanks in large part to this great crowd. I think the Taker Triple H portion at the end was very good. I think these two have always had good chemistry. And I thought they used Hardy as the underdog very well throughout. But I thought Show and Kozlov, you know, while giants, I think are very effective in situations like these, I kind of thought the two took the match down a little.
Yeah, you always get like some of these monsters in this. The thing is, they do book them at least sparingly. They're not left in there for too long.
But even 5 minutes is too long. You know
it's not
I mean?
Like this is, you know, your ladder match where they're serving as a base. There's not a whole lot of high flying in these kinds of matches where they're necessary for that reason. I will say though, watching this and later as well, there are seldom Elimination Chamber matches that I leave disappointed with. Like for a 36 minute match, I really enjoyed this, especially once you, got rid of the excess, so to speak, in this match.
Right. Are you a fan of the structure?
Overall, I like it. It's a little limiting.
Yeah.
But I never find these are matches that, like, I hate the Lethal Lockdown match, for instance, where it's everyone in the cage, you're waiting for all the entrants, then it's the weapons, and it's just, it's too much for me, and I never really get into those ones. But this, I find it's different enough. I think you have, the intervals sometimes can drag a little, but, overall, I think this is a pretty good concept.
Yeah. What I like most about the chamber is not necessarily the structure itself, but the fact that you have the intervals of guys entering. And essentially, it's basically War Games.
Except, it is.
Except it,
I think it's a better version of War Games, to be honest.
Except with individuals and one ring instead of two.
Because with War Games, you're not into buying any finishes until everyone's in.
Right.
Like imagine going 20 minutes till Taker was in here until we could get our first elimination. It's just – those 20 minutes are just inconsequential.
So I love that aspect of it. However, I agree that especially for people to dive off of into like I find the structure a little confining for most of these guys. Like anytime you dive off the top, you have to watch for the ceiling. I suppose like landing on the steel floor is cool, but like kind of gets tiring after a little bit when that's all you can really do, either that or like jamming somebody's face into the fence. So I'm actually really interested to see if they make any improvements to these things on Sunday with their new chamber.
If only it was a Raw pay-per-view on Sunday, we could have had Stephanie come out and state that we wanted to redesign the Elimination Chamber. And we have our original chamber, which was designed by some architect. But now the new chamber was designed by a creator.
Yeah.
And Hunter unveils the new chamber.
Yeah. I'm very curious to know who was consulted with the design of this actual chamber.
That'd be really interesting.
Yeah. Whether or not like it had much wrestler involvement involved or if it was just somebody.
Well, I remember at the time, none of the guys knew what the Elimination Chamber was. I think like they were not privy to it until they got to the arena that day and then figuring this thing out. Like it was just, it was this big mystery at the time. Like, what is the Elimination Chamber?
And make a match out of it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Here's your toy. Yeah. Go figure it out. Van Damme, you want to hit me with that frog splash? Do you have room there?
Yeah.
I'm sticking my neck out for you.
All right, dude. Whatever.
Whatever. Edge is backstage complaining to his wife, Vicky Guerrero, about the match, and he wants it restarted. And Vicky says it was Edge's fault, and he lost. And she immediately regrets saying this, and Edge just looks stunned. He has lost his title. He lost it in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
What will Edge do?
I love Edge. I'm a big fan of Edge. Real overactor, though.
Whoa.
Seriously. Like his
I just lost my title!
Like,
what am I gonna do?
Just like, a little bit much. And I know in wrestling, it's okay to overact, but I felt even for me it was a little much.
Yeah, I will say though, for these kinds of any kind of matches like this, if you're trying to figure out, like I think Edge, very much like a Matt Jackson, just has such a great mind for figuring out matches with lots of bodies involved and just making it flow and make sense. And everyone always talked about Edge as being one of those guys that whether it was ladder matches, and I'm sure it extended over to stuff like these chamber matches, he was probably a big part in kind of the layout of these. Mm-hmm. And I thought he probably was a kind of a key person to, you know, the later match that we'll get into.
Yeah.
We go to Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler on the Raw announce team, and Cole says that Shane is going to look to avenge his father's pain. And then we went into one of the greatest videos ever.
It really was excellent.
Oh my God, yeah. Way. Intermittent explosive disorder.
What was that?
IBD is what Randy Orton acknowledged was a condition, a disorder that he had been diagnosed with to explain his anger outbursts, which I think was the WWE having some enjoyment or some fun at the expense of Orton, who legitimately had to go to anger management during his time in the WWE. Oh.
So he had IBD.
He had IBD.
Okay, not IBS.
And he then calls it a mental condition where an individual who is sufficiently provoked suffers loss of control, resulting in outbursts of physical violence. And therefore, Orton explains he is not responsible for kicking Vince McMahon in the head. This was a promo that Randy Orton delivered and was encapsulated in this video.
Sounds great.
Yes.
Plausible.
So yeah. You can say all you want about scripting today. It sounds like it was significantly worse in 2009, as I recalled it. Orton then threatened to sue the WWE if he was fired for his condition as the reason to keep him in the Rumble and in the company, and said there would be no Royal Rumble. Sorry, there would be no WrestleMania because he won the Rumble. Somehow, if he was fired, this domino effect would end with WrestleMania being canceled.
He threatened to sue the company and to put the company under litigation so that WrestleMania would not be able to go down.
I don't know if he could pull that one off. That would be tough.
I also don't know.
You must suspend operations while we litigate this.
Well, I also don't know if Shawn Michaels losing his bank account in the stock market would necessarily mean that he becomes somebody's slave.
Way, I have plenty to say about Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
Stephanie says in the video that firing Orton would be too easy. She had bigger plans. Shane plans. And Shane returns and goes after Orton, who was also alongside Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase. Shane went 1-on-3 here and triumphed.
He had a chair, though, or a kendo stick. He had a kendo stick.
Yes. I didn't think this could get worse. I was just like, oh, God, this is the worst of Shane. And then this fucking noise pollution came out of this video called Hunt You Down by Saliva. This is everything I hated in one montage. Shane running wild with Hunt You Down by Saliva, which might be the worst song I've ever heard. This was so terrible, this song. And then there was a backstage segment as well where he teased punting Stephanie, and Shane dove in front of Orton's boot and took a punt to the ribs. And then somehow Shane landed a coast-to-coast dropkick, I guess post-kick to the ribs, onto Ted DiBiase, and then points to Randy from the ramp as our dramatic video ends.
Okay.
I had to take a break from the pay-per-view at this point. I wasn't ready for this match.
Save the fact that it was Shane McMahon, somebody that I think you're not that big of a fan of in this situation. I thought this was looked to be a tremendous build and was a tremendously effective video. I mean, that whole thing with like Randy threatening to kick Steph and Steph's brother jumping in the way, I thought was great. And I just feel like Randy, from the looks of it in this video at least.
This is every Saliva song. No, I can't. I'm sorry. Listen, I'm not criticizing the story. I'm criticizing the central protagonist here in Shane McMahon. Right. That I just, when they really want to get behind someone, it's amazing how Shane McMahon is positioned. Like,
I know.
They know how to tell these stories really effectively. And it's just with a guy that I can take Shane McMahon more seriously today in this role than I could here. This dude looked like a fan out of the stands. Like literally, this guy just looked so ridiculous next to Randy Orton, who looks like in the best shape of his life.
Yeah.
That I could never buy this.
Okay, well, at the same time, what about somebody like Mick Foley? He's hardly a, you know, physique
not so much the physique, though, but I mean, this, I mean, Mick Foley was this wild madman who will go to any lengths and you could buy him.
And that's who Shane McMahon, I think, is trying to play.
See, and that's just where I can't, like, I understand he does all these crazy stunts, but I just, I don't look at him and say, I don't have the same feeling as I would of a Cactus Jack circa 95.
I don't either, John. I guess I only say these things because Shane gets great reactions from the audience, and it's clear to me at least that much of the audience is able to buy him on a similar level.
So we go into first Randy Orton is backstage just staring at us, and he asks Shane how his father's doing and hoping and praying that their son will avenge him, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Tonight is the first time Vince is helpless. And he's going to watch Shane cry and scream for his life. And he won't stop until he has destroyed the McMahon family. And then we'll headline WrestleMania.
Man, I love this version of Randy Orton. Just this very slow, intense, and seriously frightening level of delivery. The guy really comes across like a serial killer. So it's a great version of Randy.
And this was also when they had just given him that theme song. Mm-hmm. It just started, which was a necessary change from his previous theme. Which
I actually liked the other theme a lot. Like, I identified it a lot with him. So I think when it changed, it was a little jarring. It wasn't necessarily one of those themes that I think everybody wanted changed, but I certainly feel like the voices theme fits him.
It fit this new kind of like slow, methodical killer. The other theme was kind of just this.
He's kind of like the spoiled brat who, you know, was now kicking old people in the head.
Shane and Randy, no holds barred match. Shane wearing his baseball jersey that reads on the back, "In the name of the Father."
Oh, wow.
Yes. So I guess Randy was going through the Father, the Son, and Hunter would be the Holy Spirit at WrestleMania. Shane lands this jab early on that hurts Orton, and I will either give Shane the greatest credit for these work punches, or he just fucking drilled Randy because it looked like the latter.
Does his striking look better now or then? Has there been any improvement?
No, I'm not even saying it looked good. The form looked awful, but he looked like he just landed these on Randy, which I feel he probably did.
Perhaps, but my whole thing is, this guy's been taking private lessons from Phil Nurse. Yeah, I figure there'd be
I think were better than the ones you saw at Survivor Series. He has regressed under Phil Nurse.
Yeah, I feel there'd be at least some level of progression in his technique, but I really don't feel like he's gotten better.
Well, Orton starts stomping on him, and Shane, with more punches, sends Orton to the floor and then pulls out a table and trash can. Orton spills on the floor, and I do mean spills, because when he got up, the mat on the floor looked like an oil spill.
Oh, jeez.
Like, holy Christ.
Jeff was sunburnt, but I think Orton took a bath in sunblock, because he came out just like he dipped himself in a vat of oil.
My God, this mat, I was waiting for someone to slip on this.
Yeah.
He got up, and there was like, it looked like fucking Exxon had just taken a dump here next to the fans.
Mm.
So he runs Shane into the exposed buckle. He's kicking at the back. Shane then brings out a kendo stick and starts using it. Orton gets clotheslined to the floor, and then the announcer's desk is cleared, and Shane takes a monitor and just blasts Randy in the head and just nailed him, and I have no doubt – just legit cut him open, because it was on the top of the head. It wasn't even the forehead.
Couldn't have been that clean, though. You know, I'm sure Randy cut himself beforehand.
I don't know. Guys don't cut the tops of their heads like that. It's the forehead, and this was definitely a cut on the top.
It was way too convenient of a spot for blood to just simply flow.
I think
like
he just took the monitor.
I don't know. Well, I guess,
because remember, this was when blood was being banned. And guys would just do hard way. 2009, they had stopped doing blood.
So were there
this was that gray area where it was, well, then we'll just do hard way blood. They banned blading.
Right. Okay.
But if a guy got cut open, a guy got cut open.
Were there repercussions coming off of this? Do you know?
I never heard for this one. But a few months earlier, when Batista did it in a cage match, he got fined $100,000.
Oh, wow.
Because they got a camera angle of him blading. and they find him and Jericho.
In that case, I feel like they did a great job.
Well, that's what kind of – it was like, okay, well, if we can't Blade, we'll get Blood the other way, which was 10 times more dangerous.
Yeah.
So Orton is bleeding here. I will say this.
Look great though.
That's it. Like, I don't enjoy Blood that much watching it now, but I mean, this was – it was the half of his face that was covered it. Like, it was just coming down. It was a hell of a visual.
Mm-hmm.
So Orton is just dead here on the announcer's desk, bleeding, and Shane climbs to the top, teasing an elbow through the desk when Ted DiBiase and Cody Rhodes run down. And Cody gets a chair as Ted holds him, and Cody misses Shane and nails Ted in the back with Shane turning. This was quite the awkward chair miss by Cody to Ted as he held him up. And so Cody then sends Ted down to the mat, and Shane just places him in the corner. And Shane sets up for the Van Terminator and hits it on Cody. So he has taken out Cody and Ted. Shane then backs up and dives off for Orton and misses going through the announcer's desk as Orton then tells Ted to go take Cody to the back. There's a draping DDT to Shane. Shane keeps kicking out, and then Orton sets up a table inside the ring, hits a superplex through the table, and Shane just kicks out again from a superplex through a table. Orton then teases the punt. Shane stops it with a spear, and then uses a chair onto Orton, attacking his ankle with it. Orton then starts begging off, and Shane hits him again. And now Shane teases the punt. He runs at Orton into an RKO, and Randy pins Shane at 18 minutes and 17 seconds as he grabs his ankle in pain after the pin.
Yeah, so it was pretty much one of Randy's toughest matches, and he gets the hard-fought victory over Shane McMahon.
Which to me was just all wrong for Randy. The big match was WrestleMania, where you can have this crazy 50-50 match. And to me, this to me cooled off Randy a lot, going equal with Shane here and being vulnerable to him. I thought that was a key to this match too, just the fact that he was
I wish they could just have some explanation for Shane McMahon and how he's able to go 50-50 with these guys. Maybe he like secretly drugs his opponent's water beforehand.
Yeah, he got he contaminated the baby oil.
Maybe. But I'll say I thought this was a great Shane McMahon match with all the typical bells and whistles. Saw the big dive, saw the big Man Terminator. And, you know, I feel like he's kind of got the appeal of like a New Jack, where he's not the most athletic or technical wrestler, but when he wrestles, you know you're going to see
the best comparison.
You know you're going to see big dives and weapons and crazy shit like that. And he delivered.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about this over the next few weeks of kind of Randy after this match, but I don't think they ever got back to Randy's level of heat between January and February. And I think this match kind of took away from it, and they also had some bad creative. So the way this was set up is, after this match, the next night, by the way, Shane is on Raw without a scratch on him and challenges Randy to a rematch. And they go to have this match, and this time Stephanie gets involved, and Randy goes after Stephanie, and finally Hunter comes. And this is the first time on camera they've linked Hunter with Stephanie, very much like Cena and Nikki Bella, kind of. And that leads to Hunter-Randy, which became this – you know, personal family grudge. And it was weird because Hunter's now the champion. So you've got Randy going for the title when it's Hunter that's after revenge to defend his family and his wife's honor.
Okay. What's weird about that though? It works both ways.
I just thought it was weird that it was Hunter was the one going for this revenge and getting all this heat on Randy. And at the same time, it's like the title just felt so
secondary.
It just felt like it had no place in this at all.
Hmm.
This was something that probably could have been its own program. And I think Randy just murdering Shane would have just intensified Randy that much more.
Right.
Who is going to stand up when he's killed Vince? He's killed Shane. One thing here is that after the match, Randy teases the punt as Shane is laying there, but then sells the ankle and can't do the punt playing off of the chair shot to the right. ankle. So it was a good attention to detail. Hmm. I will say that. So Shane did not get punted and had to do an angle the next night with Randy. So then we had – remember the ECW run?
No.
On Sci-Fi? Not many do. But the ECW champion in 2009 was Jack Swagger. And he was defending the title against Fit Finlay. And we got our one match commentated by Todd Grisham, who next weekend will be calling the UFC card in Halifax.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yes. But in 2009.
He's calling the whole show?
He's doing play-by-play.
I thought he was just like a some type of host.
No. Him and Anik are going to be swapping back and forth.
Is he the guy? Is he Goldberg's replacement or is there another name?
I mean, the name that had been out there was
Jim Rome.
Jim Rome. But he hasn't been hired yet. Oh. There probably will be another hiring, okay. But for now, Anik and Todd Grisham are going to be the guys heading up the play-by-play, okay. With Anik doing the majority of the shows.
Maybe Grisham will be great. Who knows?
Matt Stryker is not calling UFC in Halifax, but he was calling the Jack Swagger Fit Finlay match. And this was very weird because for weeks and weeks, everyone had been awaiting Christian's return to WWE. And everyone figured he was going to be showing up on SmackDown to feud with Jeff Hardy. But instead, they took Matt Hardy from ECW and they put him on SmackDown to feud with his brother. So Christian took the spot vacated by Matt and they debuted Christian on the Go Home show this past Tuesday. And then that was what everyone wanted to see.
Yeah.
And he got beat by Jack Swagger on that show on ECW going into this pay-per-view. It was a very weird return for Christian after his TNA run.
Huh.
And so you got this match, and Finlay comes out with his son, Hornswoggle, and Stryker summarizes this feud.
In fact, Swagger said he felt victimized and embarrassed by Finlay and Hornswoggle. But hey, Hornswoggle stole Jack's title.
Hornswoggle was playing with Jack's title. Jack was looking to have the championship celebration. Finlay did the honorable thing in making his son give it back. Swagger took exception, shoved Hornswoggle down. Finlay retaliated. That brings us to where we are right now. Who's right and who's wrong is open for discussion. And I'm more than happy to discuss it with you if you want.
No thanks.
Swagger had a title celebration. Then Hornswoggle stole the ECW title. Finlay made his son give the title back, but then Swagger shoved Hornswoggle, and Stryker says, you can argue who was right or wrong. I'm willing to discuss this later on. And Grisham says, well, I'm not. And we moved on from the build up to this match. This was a let's just get this over with kind of feel from Todd Grisham. And then the crowd starts chanting, we want Christian. I wonder why. This was so weird. Finlay goes right after the left leg. Swagger kicks Finley's shoulder into the post and then attacks the arm of Finlay. Finlay hit an inverted DDT into a backbreaker. Then Swagger missed him in the corner. Finlay got a roll up and Swagger rolls out too far. So the count isn't made and Finlay starts yelling at the referee here. Finlay then looks at Hornswoggle as he gets on the apron. The crowd cheered Hornswoggle, but then Swagger shoved Finlay into the ropes, knocking Hornswoggle off the apron and hit a gut-wrench powerbomb to win the match in 8 minutes.
This is certainly the death spot in the card, you know, sandwiched between two chamber matches and also two very dramatic matches in Shane versus Orton and JBL and Shawn Michaels. So crowd not really there for this. However, I do kind of applaud them for working more of a technical style to follow what was very much a hardcore match in the Shane versus Orton match. Crowd didn't really seem into it, but for me, it was like you know, being served something salty, you know, to balance like a spice, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, or sweet, in a meal.
You do great on Chopped. I just watched, the American version the other night where it was Beat Bobby Flay, where they got all these past chefs to come back that had won the show and they would face off. And then of those 12 chefs, one would go on to get to take on Bobby Flay, who is, you know, the chef of all chefs.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy wins and they state, what do you feel is Bobby Flay's weakness? What dish is his weakness? And he says, Asian food. And as you can see, I'm Asian. So he picked, what's it called? I can't remember the food he picked, but he got to pick his signature dish to challenge Bobby Flay to, and Bobby Flay won.
Oh, wow.
He prevailed over this chef.
Okay.
Okay. You don't care at all. That was my, intermission, like Swagger and Fit Finley was to the Seattle crowd. Cole and Lawler then note that Shane has repeatedly lost consciousness since that match. He's been taken to a local medical facility, and Stephanie has left with Shane, which is a detail to keep in mind. Then we went to Shawn Michaels, who was praying backstage.
Yeah, this was the whole segment.
He was just praying.
He was cutting a promo via prayer.
Imagine they scripted his prayers.
Hmm.
Dear Lord, the WWE Universe, they are trending in the direction of Shawn Michaels. Please help me prevail over WWE superstar JBL. Amen. So then we got another video package. Creative was just wild at this time. So Shawn Michaels, coming off of the economic collapse in the U.S. in 2008, he had made some tough investments, and he was on hard times despite being a regular weekly performer in the biggest wrestling company in the world as a featured star. He was having money problems. He might have to go get a job.
Oh, no.
So he did. What am I going to do? So apparently you're like, this is a nonprofit, what he does with the WWE. It's just, you know, like going to work out at the gym. You're going to Raw Monday night. So JBL hires Shawn Michaels as insurance that he can become champion by WrestleMania. So the WWE has no problem with this obvious conflict of interest. They have a match booked between JBL and Shawn Michaels, where JBL wants Shawn Michaels to lay down for him.
It was a number one contenders match.
Oh, number one contenders match. So, of course, there was the famous line that Shawn Michaels used, that they brought the quote up here of how Shawn Michaels lays down for nobody, but times have changed for one Shawn Michaels.
When was that clip from? When was that line from?
That was 97 they pulled that out from. Wow, that was nice. That was a peak Shawn Michaels form where he legit was not going to be losing to anyone.
Nice callback.
And it ended with JBL getting this title shot against John Cena at the Royal Rumble. And then Shawn Michaels super kicked both JBL and Cena at the Rumble, but then placed JBL on top. And Shawn was battling the demons inside him. How could I have done this? He's really having this eternal struggle. But Cena, of course, made his comeback and won the match anyway. So JBL did not become champion. And now this match has been set up at No Way Out with Michaels' freedom on the line. If Shawn Michaels wins, he is free, and JBL will cut him a check for all the money that is owed to Shawn. But if JBL wins, he gets the rights to Shawn Michaels, his name and likeness, in perpetuity. Forever.
Yeah. In perpetuity.
Oh, call your local cable company. Buy this pay-per-view.
Well,
were you feeling this struggle of Shawn Michaels?
You really have to suspend your disbelief to get into this one. But, you know, knowing Shawn in this stage of his career, I think he seemed to be looking for opportunities to act a lot more.
Yes, yes.
Opportunities to tell stories a lot more. And doing something like this provided a stage for Shawn to act out a storyline that I would assume a lot of viewers at the time, probably not you or I at this age, but I'm thinking a lot of other viewers in middle America, anywhere in America, that they could possibly relate to. Somebody who maybe lost a lot of money and had to reluctantly work a job in order to make ends meet, you know, for a family.
See, I feel that for anyone to be able to relate to this,
yeah,
you have to be able to believe that Shawn Michaels has a real low-paying gig here in the WWE. How can you fathom this man even?
Maybe he spends a lot. Maybe his ranch just costs a lot to maintain.
See, I just don't think anyone could buy this because of it being Shawn Michaels. Perhaps. This guy who has been in this company consistently since 1988, 89.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. At the same time, like,
he blew everything. Yeah. He invested everything.
Dude, you hear about athletes going bankrupt. You hear about rock stars, millionaires going bankrupt all the time. I mean, Shawn Michaels certainly doesn't seem that type, especially at this stage of his career. But, you know, whatever. It's a wrestling storyline. I'm willing to suspend a bit of disbelief.
Rebecca, Shawn Michaels' wife, was at ringside for this match. Mm-hmm. Maybe the best actor in the family.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't say that lightly because Shawn Michaels was a tremendous actor for pro wrestling. But Rebecca was really good here.
Rebecca had her Helen Hart acting chops.
Oh, boy, yes. There was no topping Helen Hart. No. JBL and Shawn Michaels. I will say JBL, he was a great heel at this time. Yeah. I mean, a truly unlikable persona.
Perfect for this role.
Now, Michael Cole, in the spirit of unbelievable statements, said this is the most important match of Shawn Michaels' career, which I guess if his freedom is truly on the line, I guess Shawn Michaels is in the most important match of his career. This tops them all.
Yes.
And Shawn walks down and he stands in front of his wife, and Rebecca has tears in her eyes.
Wow.
You want to have me on the panel for the Academy Awards? I can't judge acting, but you start to cry when you're just trying to channel that. I'm checking your name off. You win.
If you can cry, that's it.
That's it. That's my barrier for great acting is crying in a scene.
What if there are multiple criers nominated?
Then that'd be a tough year. That would be tough. Then I'd have to really get into the minutia of the emotion that it generated out of me.
Have you seen many of the Academy Award nominated pictures this year?
Probably not one. No. You?
I have, yeah. I've seen Moonlight and La La Land.
How's La La Land?
Dude, I fucking loved it.
Wow.
It was really good.
Is there a lot of singing in it? I just can't do musicals.
I had the same impression. I didn't want to really see it. I was kind of dragged to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But like sitting there watching it, I started to cry.
Wow.
Yeah. So maybe I deserved an Academy Award.
What movies off the top of your head have you cried in? I've cried in movies.
I don't remember right now.
Oh.
Off the top of my head.
Are you a crier?
I can be.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah. It's I'm trying to remember.
No Way Out, 2009.
December to Dismember, the entire time. So the match begins here. Michaels just started off with a flurry, and JBL retreats to the floor as the crowd is cheering. JBL hands Shawn a chair to try and goad him into hitting him with the chair so he'd get disqualified and lose.
I love it.
And Michaels wouldn't go for it. He clipped the knee of JBL and attacked it, applied a figure four. JBL got the rope break.
Wait a second. So there's this was a DQ? Like this was a regular
match? This was a straight-up match. Yep.
Because that plays into the finish, doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah. So JBL gets the rope break. Then Michaels goes for the crossface. Irish whip sends Michaels into the buckle and then to the floor as JBL gets the advantage. There's repeated punches in the corner, a bear hug. Michaels blocked a superplex, knocked him down. Then Michaels missed with the elbow drop and JBL hit the clothesline from hell, but Michaels kicked out. Then JBL hits a second clothesline from hell and Michaels is on the edge of the apron, as Rebecca is just horrified at this and he gets kicked to the floor for the count out, but Shawn battles back in at the count of nine. JBL will take the win any way he can. So then JBL goes to the floor and he gets in Rebecca's face and it leads to Rebecca slapping JBL. Should this have been a disqualification, Way?
Of course. It directly played into the finish. I mean, they set up Shawn's comeback via Rebecca attacking JBL. And I thought it was a great spot. Got a great reaction from this audience.
They loved this. Michaels came to life. He fired up. He hit a flying forearm. The crowd's going nuts. He hit a top rope elbow. Just milked the crowd as he calls for sweet chin music. He hits it. And Shawn Michaels pins JBL in 13:20. And Michael Cole calls it the emancipation of Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
And Rebecca had this look of relief. And then they kissed and they left together.
Mm-hmm. I thought the match was great. I really did. I thought the – if you can suspend your disbelief and buy into this story, I thought everything was very sound.
I think this program is best viewed in these 13 minutes and 20 seconds.
Oh, because the rest?
The storyline was just – it was just so unbelievable every single week on TV. But in this 13 minute and 20 seconds –
Set up the premise, simple. Here's
you,
a man.
You knew everything. You knew what this win meant, and it was like, with time removed from this, you can at least buy into the story. I find when you go back and watch some of these, you can buy into the story. It's a lot easier when you're removed from it rather than in the moment at the time.
It's certainly, compared to, you know, your typical pro wrestling fare, this was certainly a lot more, adventurous and a lot more, what's the word? Like they're trying for a lot, but I thought Sean and JBL's storytelling were really great here. Ambitious is what I'm trying to say. They're very ambitious, and I thought they were.
So how were Sean's money troubles solved here? Like they said, JBL
wrote him a check, but
for what work though? Like what was Sean owed here? He was under a contract, right?
A contract for the duration of the contract.
So he gets paid out for the entire length of the deal?
Those were the terms.
Wow. Well, okay.
But I mean, my question is, I mean, this should have been a DQ. Should it have not?
That's something that JBL could have maybe contested.
It should have been the clause.
They actually would do a rematch on TV a week later.
Oh, okay.
For the right to take on The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
Spoiler alert.
I thought the match was good. I mean, if anything, I feel like maybe they could have benefited from maybe a near fall or two after Sean just kind of, I mean, the wife slaps him, Sean comes back, sweet chin music, and that was it. I feel like they could have maybe extended it almost a little bit longer. But overall, like, I thought it was good storytelling for pro wrestling.
Yeah, it was funny because in the early part of 2009, they were so locked into this story that you were thinking, man, is this going to be Sean's Mania program?
Oh.
And it was like the end of this. Like Sean's a perfect example of that build to WrestleMania where the next day it's suddenly like he's going to wrap this up with JBL with one more singles match on TV. But it's like, boom, it's going to be Michaels and The Undertaker. And you just went from this story to something completely different that everyone did want to see at WrestleMania, which was the right direction. Todd Grisham is now backstage. He's moved. And he interviews Chris Jericho, who says he will win the world title. And then he's going to invite Ric Flair out of retirement to face him at WrestleMania. And Jericho had just done this segment. He was doing these great promos at the time, running down all of the legends. And he did this segment on Raw going into this show, running down Ric Flair, talking about how he lost all respect for Ric Flair after his retirement when he started doing autograph signings and appearances for two-bit independent promotions. And he's a monkey that dances for the crowd and does his strut. And it was just a real great promo. So here he says he'll challenge Flair to come out of retirement and face him at WrestleMania to become a 17-time champion, but then says, I'm not going to do that and waste that on a charity case. And I was like, they should have left this open. This was something that you could believe was a direction they might go going into this match. Like you could see many different directions in this chamber match of where to go. I don't know why Jericho would have had to.
So you mean Flair coming in?
I'm saying like Jericho said in this match, in this promo, I'm going to win this match and then challenge Flair.
Yeah.
But then he immediately said, no, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
I think he should have just left it open ended.
So what came of it, of the Flair involvement?
So Jericho continued to run down all of the legends on TV, and that was – they didn't want to have Flair do a match again after the retirement. So that was the year where it was Jericho against Snuka, Ricky Steamboat, and Piper at WrestleMania, and Flair was in their corner. So it was Jericho against the legends. So that takes us to our main event of the night, the second chamber match, this one for the world title with John Cena defending the title against Mike Knox – Kane, Edge. Oh, I kind of ruined this. It was supposed to be Kofi Kingston. And as Kofi Kingston made his entrance, he was jumped by Edge, thrown into the steps, and then took a concerto on the steps. And Edge just took Kofi's spot in the match.
Yeah. This I almost found tougher to suspend my disbelief for than the Shawn Michaels being a slave to JBL thing.
This is a major leap, but to their credit, the next night on Raw, they explained, Vicky came out to start the show, which is kind of weird in and of itself. She's the GM of SmackDown. She came out with Edge and explained that since Stephanie took Shane to the hospital, she was the highest ranking official and was able to put Edge into the spot that was vacated by Kofi.
Okay.
Now, why the SmackDown GM can match make Raw matches?
Oh, because Steph wasn't around.
Well, should you be in – if the Yankees are off to the bathroom, can you take their draft pick because you're the Boston Red Sox? I mean, this is a raw match.
They're not in competition necessarily.
They should be.
Okay.
Anyway, listen, it was an explanation.
Yeah,
and they state Stephanie left the building earlier with Shane.
I'd buy it.
So Edge takes Kofi's spot, which let's be honest, Kofi was hardly a – this was not a very impressive lineup before Edge was entered here. I mean, right. Mike Knox, Kofi, Kane, and then Rey Mysterio was in the match, and Chris Jericho making our six. So Rey comes out to check on Kofi, and he's furious as Edge locks himself in the pod, and then Jericho and Mysterio start the match, and Rey runs hard into the corner, right into the pod, which Michael Cole notes to us, is bulletproof.
Yeah.
Which has never been tested.
Well, wait. Maybe Sunday.
In another era.
Yeah.
There would be firearms in this match.
Lexon Glass.
Lexon Glass.
What is that? Is that a company?
I don't know. Is it a type of glass or is it a
Lexon Glass?
A brand of glass.
It just sounds cool.
Lexon Glass.
Yeah.
Rey was catapulted and then scaled up the fence and then came off with a Hurricane Rana to the floor. Rey was great here.
Lexon uncoated polycarbonate sheet is the standard grade of Lexon sheet for general purpose applications. High impact Lexon can be used for economical protection against breakage or intrusion. A better insulator than glass, Lexon sheet contributes to lower energy costs.
I love this. That's great.
All right.
Well, there you have it. Lexon. Number three was Kane, who stares down Edge in his pod and then attacks Rey, who he had been feuding with over the last few months. Kane attacks the knee of Jericho, who comes back and misses a lion salt. Rey delivers a 619, but missed as it got stopped by Kane, and Cole said the call was disconnected. Kane goes for a choke slam. He counters, hits a head scissors, and then the call is made. Jericho hits a code breaker. Rey goes on top of the pod and hits a seated senton to Kane, and he pins Kane. 9.5 minutes. Kane is our first elimination.
I feel a guy like Rey is better suited for the size of the chamber. I mean, him being a smaller guy, I think he doesn't have – the cage overall feels bigger for him to move around.
Number four was our man Mike Knox, who went after Jericho and Rey. He hit a brogue kick and then a Brody knee drop. So we were getting spots from the past and the future in the WWE and beyond. He runs Jericho's back into the fence twice and then hangs Rey upside down on the fence with his boot in the chain link. It's all Knox just killing these guys until Jericho lands a code breaker while Knox is holding Rey after a backbreaker, and Jericho just eliminates Knox.
Yeah, his move used to be the Sister Abigail.
Knox's?
Yeah.
Can't say I registered any. The knocks out?
Yeah.
Zero recollection of any of this way. The knocks out. Oh, my God. Crowd is chanting for Cena, who is still in a pod. The fifth entrant was Edge, and Rey goes after him, trying to get revenge for Kofi before he even gets out of the pod. Jericho cuts off Rey with a clothesline, and then Edge and Jericho go at it. Edge misses a spear to Rey, but then blocks a code breaker, and Jericho tried to stop a 619 with a spear, but looked very clunky. Jericho came off the top with a sunset flip powerbomb that sent Rey and Edge off the turnbuckle.
It was like a sunset flip powerbomb / German superplex combo.
Yeah, this looked really good.
Yeah.
And John Cena is the final entrant. He enters at almost the 21-minute mark of the match and attacks Edge and Jericho. The crowd was noticeably up once Cena entered this.
Oh, yeah. They really built it up well. I mean, you had two heels beating up the underdog in Rey Mysterio.
He did the five-knuckle shuffle to Edge. Jericho then stopped an AA with a code breaker. There was a 619 to Cena. And then Edge spears Cena and eliminates John Cena, who lasted 90 seconds in this match. This would be the shortest match that Cena's ever had on a pay-per-view, ever, by far. 90 seconds and he's eliminated.
Yeah, it was almost shocking. You know, I mean, the whole match seemed to be set up for Cena's basically coming in to save Rey Mysterio. He comes in, ton of fire, and then just like that is eliminated with the help of Rey Mysterio. So it was a really surprising decision, but I thought it was great. Like, it was one of those kind of shocking things. And again, played into the finish, made you more interested in the outcome.
So Cena is out, and once again, they achieved what they did in the first chamber match with Edge's elimination. You had a real surprise with the champion being pinned.
Yeah.
Rey then hit the 619 to Jericho, goes for the West Coast pop, and then tries to counter into the walls, and then Rey goes into a roll-up, and he pins Jericho, so it's down to Rey and Edge. And Edge sets up for a spear, misses in the corner, there's a roll-up for a near fall that the crowd bought, they were really chanting and behind Rey. Rey spun off the shoulders of Edge into a DDT for another near fall. Edge goes for a powerbomb onto the steel, which Rey blocks and hits a reverse 619. Edge then presses Rey over and into the pod. Both men are down, and then Edge spears Rey, and he pins him to win the match and the title in 29 minutes and 45 seconds. So Edge loses the WWE title and then wins the world title, and the announcers ask if Raw even has a champion any longer, because now a SmackDown guy has won the Raw title, and both titles are held by SmackDown guys.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a lot of booking here to keep you guessing and not knowing what direction WrestleMania was going to go in for the title programs.
Yeah.
I guess you could deduce that it would be Orton and Hunter after tonight, but going off the air here, you had no idea what, because no one figured Edge would be part of the Raw program.
Yeah, I thought a really solid finish, and overall, I mean, they told a really good story with Edge, but the match itself, I thought it was excellent.
It was really good.
This was a really good Elimination Chamber match, one of the best I've seen, and I certainly consider the MVP of this match to be Rey Mysterio, who, I mean, started it and ended it, and throughout, he played the fantastic underdog. And his storyline with Edge, I think, was set up really well with the Kofi attack, him just charging at Edge the moment that Edge was set to come out, Rey charging at Edge in the pod, I thought was great. And he was just fantastic. And, you know, if I have any, man, all the near falls, they played, the crowd was into everything. And what I loved about this chamber match was that they didn't really rely on the structure, too much. They didn't rely on kind of like the hardcore, slamming somebody's face into the fence or the steel floor too much. It was just essentially a match that took advantage of the underdog being outnumbered and then having somebody come in to save him. And that same War Games concept that I thought just made this a very good match that built really well to the finish.
And I mean, you had some great talent involved in both matches. And I mean, when they first started doing these two chambers on one show, I mean, there was the idea, is it just, it's too much? But I love both these chamber matches. I thought both were really enjoyable. They were my highlights of the show. And yeah, I would put the main event above the Raw above the SmackDown one, but both were great. I mean, this was an hour plus of chamber matches we had.
And I'll say, like, I thought overall the show was very strong. It really did not drag at all for me. The only real filler you had in the middle there was kind of Swagger and Finley. I didn't even think that was that bad. But you know, you had stakes for the two chamber matches. Of course, you had, whether or not believable or not, you had stakes for the JBL HBK match.
You definitely did.
Turned out really well. And Shane and Orton, not everybody would be the best.
I have my qualms with it.
But. Yeah. But the match was entertaining. I don't think anybody could deny that. So overall, I thought a really solid pay-per-view. I'm going to give this 8.5 out of 10.
I'll go 7. Yeah. This was a very enjoyable show, I will say, going into it. Now, this is fun because I think there's a good shot that you would not remember what the title match was for WrestleMania. So watching this show, what was the match you would want to see Edge in going into WrestleMania with that title?
Oh, I totally forget any of this. I don't even know what brand he stayed on after this.
So just base it on this show, because that's where everyone would be guessing coming out of this show where he would go.
He doesn't really have a clear opponent coming out of this. I mean, I feel like Ray is sort of the you know, guy Kofi is supposed to get revenge on him, but it's not going to be
Kofi. Yeah, it wouldn't have been Kofi.
Coming out of this, I don't even know what brand he was on. I forget.
Well, he ended up being on Raw. Uh-huh. And so I thought – I'm guessing here what I thought that night. This was 8 years ago. But you would figure like Cena would probably be involved here. He got beat by Edge and would come back.
Right.
And if you ever want to see the John Cena just like brushing off a title loss, go watch the night after Raw. He comes out and says, congratulations. I don't care how you got into the chamber match. You beat me fair and square. I will not complain about any of this. But I'm coming for that title. So – I mean, that was a pretty popular feud. Edge and Cena was an excellent feud in 2006. So they were going to do that match at WrestleMania, but it would become a three-way with the Big Show. And that made no sense to me.
Huh.
Why is the Big Show in this?
Yeah, and that was on Raw? That was like considered a Raw program or a SmackDown?
Well, it got weird because they would have like Edge and Hunter going back and forth because Hunter's on SmackDown and he was going to face Randy on Raw.
Right.
So you had those two going back and forth. And then you had Edge, who's technically SmackDown, but he's the Raw champion, feuding with Cena on Raw, Big Show on SmackDown.
Okay.
So you were getting a big blurring of the lines. But
why did Big Show get in there?
I have no idea, but I would have been perfectly content to just have a straight up Edge Cena singles match at WrestleMania. So I hope you like this 24th anniversary of WrestleMania, which was marketed as the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania, because I feel there's going to be lots of it in our near future, without giving away any poll results. But let us first go to the Law message board and get some of your thoughts on No Way Out 2009. We start off with Christian Small. The main thing I remember about this show was Edge losing the WWE title, but then winning the world title on this show. Something I'm sure no one could have guessed going in, and it really built on Edge's unstable ultimate opportunist gimmick he had then. Yeah, no one could probably have guessed the outcome here, which is what the WWE wanted you doing. They wanted you guessing up until the latest possible of where's everything going for WrestleMania, which has its good and bad.
The card wasn't leaked before this?
I mean, at this time, I really have to go back and check what was out there at the time. But, I mean, the title programs, everyone was guessing going in of where they were going to go because they were just flipping stuff around. He adds, it also helped that both chambers were pretty good. Besides that, I remember this show as ending the Michaels-JBL feud a month before many thought just so Shawn could go and have the classic with Taker at Mania. Also, the waste that was Orton and Shane. You had arguably the hottest heel run going with Orton they've ever managed, and it really hurt him with Shane. I feel the same could happen with AJ Styles this year if they do put those two together. Shane really hurts more than helps. At least when Vince did matches, he knew he'd have to sell a ton, and the only heat he could get was from outside help or gimmicks. Shane is actually pushed as a threat by himself in these matches. By all accounts, Orton should have just killed Shane and moved on to Hunter from there. Anyways, a decent show with very little to complain about.
Do you think that I feel like there's certainly benefits to somebody working a Shane match, and that's the fact that it often becomes – it's considered a specialty, like a spectacle. For me, the biggest problem is when guys have to sell his straight-up punches and just like basic moves. I don't have a problem with somebody selling for Shane with a kendo stick or like doing all that crazy shit, but – when they have to sell his punches and kicks and whatever his new ground game
stagger that he dances in between punches,
that's tough to buy. If they cut all that stuff out and just try to position Shane as an underdog who is able to get the advantage using kind of bells and whistles weapons, could that be more beneficial for somebody like an AJ Styles?
Yeah. They've got their work cut out for them, but – if there's anyone you can have confidence in being able to pull something out dramatic, I mean, AJ Styles is probably at the top of your list of the options.
We got a McWhalen who says, No Way Out 2009 was always the Edge pay-per-view to me. It was great that Edge went from being the first to go in the SmackDown chamber to being the last man standing in the Raw chamber. The SmackDown chamber was good, though the mid-portion with Show and Kozlov teaming up to Teaming up on Jeff was really dull. The ECW title match did nothing but remind me of how bad that whole WWE-ECW deal was. Randy Shane was not good, and it was just heat-killing seeing Orton and Legacy getting whipped by Shane when Randy was red-hot at that point. Sean Bradshaw was okay, but Bradshaw was clearly starting to slow down at that point. The Raw Chamber match was great, especially with Ray, Jericho, Edge doing the triple finisher, just getting rid of Cena, and Ray and Edge having a good match between themselves to close it out. Overall, the two Chamber matches were both good, and the rest of the card was just there. If you were set on watching the Chamber matches, that Elimination Chamber Anthology DVD WWE release will do just fine, or just use the network.
Next up is Jesse from the Six. Like the other feedback posters, I loved Edge getting embarrassed in the first Chamber match, only to weasel his way in and win the second one. It was unpredictable and actually strengthened Edge's character. The only problem is that it meant a lot of title switches leading up to WrestleMania. This was the last show in a run in which the WWE title changed hands at four consecutive pay-per-views. Four title changes in 4 months weakens the title for me. But it's hard because we wrestling fans are fickle. If the Rumble winner and title match at Mania are too predictable, we grow restless. Yet if they shake things up, it can make the title match seem less special. What do you think is preferable? The champion heading into Mania on the back of a long reign or an unpredictable main event, even if it means flopping around the belt? I look forward to John justifiably running down Shane McMahon mercilessly. Come on, I think I'm very fair. myself personally, I think that criticisms of things being so predictable, I think is very overblown. I think typically predictable tends to be some of your most successful programs. I think you want to be able to have an idea of where things are going. That's what a story should somewhat provide. I mean, you don't want to have it so telegraphed. I think going the opposite route where everything is guesswork along the way, it's very hard to build something. It's just trying to surprise your audience week after week. It's got its drawbacks to me. And I prefer just a long story that has a payoff that is the audience feels rewarded from being invested in.
Yeah, I prefer WrestleMania to be the culmination of your long-term storylines. And for me, I feel like a long-term storyline deserves a long-term chase for somebody at the top who's been there for a while with that championship. So I'm not as big of a fan. But at the same time, I mean, this year, they are telling long-term storylines, but they might do title switches for both of the titles in February, March, leading into the WrestleMania.
Right.
But they are, like, in the case of Bray and Randy, that's a long-term storyline. They just didn't have the title throughout the entire program until now. Same with Goldberg and Lesnar. That's a long-term storyline, but they might get the title leading into Mania. Is that a compromise? You know, does that work?
I think that's kind of your middle ground. Like, I always like the idea of the Rumble. The idea that you kind of have your main event set, so it's got extra long amount of time to build. You have 2 to 3 months where that is your match. You know they are going towards, and it makes it feel that much bigger. Once Goldberg and Lesnar occurs, like realistically, that build started the night after Survivor Series. Mm-hmm. You knew this would be something they go back to, and they will reap those rewards come WrestleMania. I think that that's going to feel like a really big match if they don't stumble along the way with the creative side of things. I think that that's kind of a this year you're seeing that where it's suddenly you may not have predicted that would be the title match after Survivor Series, but that it has become the top program and will probably end up as the title match.
It almost feels like now their emphasis is more on just the characters and the feuds between the people themselves, with the title kind of just being
meaningless,
a prop. Yeah. A prop that certainly adds prestige to the match, but not necessarily the lone focus in a feud between two people.
Let's do one more here.
Okay, we go to Painkiller, who says, it was an incredibly memorable pay-per-view. I remember when and where I was watching this and how obvious it was that Edge wasn't done for the night. I remember Jeff's rainbow-colored bomb and Cole's annoying commentary. Oh, and Shane's bad punches. As for your next review, I hope you cover the WrestleMania after this in fine detail, especially the Hardys angle. Before Matt was broken, he was implying he killed dogs.
Oh, God. Totally forgot about that until now. An awful, awful storyline playing off of an actual incident that happened to Jeff Hardy's dog.
Wow.
Well, folks, we left it to you. We asked what WrestleMania you would like us to cover this year on Review Away. Because as Wei and I have discovered, as we are coming up on 8 years of doing this show this September, we were not doing long-term booking in our early days. We have gone through a lot of WrestleManias, and we are down to only a few left. So we ask you, which WrestleMania would you like us to review this year, with the options being 2, 6, 11, and 25? And of your 553 votes, 38% of you voted solidly for WrestleMania 25 to continue our look at 2009. You are going to be all caught up to date on this period of time.
Perfect.
So what we have decided is that we're back in 2 weeks on February the 24th, the Friday, and we are going to review the go-home episodes of not just Raw, but also SmackDown on that show, because you had two different programs. You had characters going back and forth, but they still were separate rosters for the most part.
Right.
So we will review both of those shows, which I'll tell you why, I'm very much looking forward to watching a two-hour Raw.
In addition to a two-hour SmackDown, though.
It kind of evens itself out,
yeah.
But let's not we do have 2 weeks to watch
this.
Fine. So that will be coming up February 24th. And then on March the 10th, we will be reviewing the 24th anniversary of WrestleMania.
You have to stop and calculate it for me.
These bastards. we'll see if I slip up at all over these next few weeks. So those will be the next two reviews we do. And do we want to throw out our idea for the 24th of next month, the one after WrestleMania? Or no?
Let's save it for now.
Okay. So those are the next two reviews then we'll be doing.
Yeah.
The go-home episodes of Raw and SmackDown on February 17th and WrestleMania 25 on Friday, March the 10th. And if you're not familiar, in between those weeks, we have the latest editions of Keep It 2000, as next Friday, Brian Mann and Nate Milton will be reviewing the January 31st, 2000 episode of Monday Nitro. So you have a week, you can go back and watch that Nitro. It's getting really bad, and Brian Mann and Nate Milton are still going strong.
Mm-hmm.
And they were joined by Alex Greenfield last week, who lasted the entire episode.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always fun. That will wrap up the show for us. You, of course, can go to liveaudiowrestling.com for all of your news and catch our latest shows. There is no shortage of them. And Wei, if people want to watch, what is a visual component to the law?
YouTube.com/liveaudiowrestling for all your needs.
Go check it out. Leave us a comment.
Yeah.
We love it.
Subscribe. Yeah, subscribe.
So you can go check that out. And how else could we end this show than by doing my favorite, a rewind to the night of February 15th, 2009, on the law, chatting No Wei Out 2009.
Right now, at this time, as we do every Sunday night, we're joined by Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Dave, how's it going?
It's going great. How you doing?
I'm doing good, sir. Some very interesting booking in tonight's No Wei Out pay-per-view. I thought overall that they did a pretty good job without, you know, swerving for swerving's sake. But of course, Dave, the one thing you're going to hear me rail about, that match with Shane and Orton, it was exactly what I expected, but that doesn't mean I just hate the way that character, has destroyed Orton and the legacy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was enough that he lost, so,
Yeah, but you know what? No, everyone's going to just remember the Shane big spot, though. No one's going to remember that he lost.
Well, that's probably the idea, but at least he lost.
Mm.
I don't know. The thing that I thought it was a really good show, but the thing
that's
a negative to me is that here we are, we should know, like, sitting here right now going, like,
what's going to happen for Mania?
What's the lineup for Mania? And we don't have a clue.
Right.
And, I mean, some people go, well, that's really good because that means that they kept you guessing. But I think it's bad because the thing is you, if you look at the big drawing matches at Mania, you know, except for the Donald Trump thing, and that one was a different thing. But if you look at any of them, they were all matches that, you were geared towards. I mean, Hogan and Rock actually came out, if I remember right, after No Wei Out, so that wasn't a long-term gearing thing. But most of your big Mania matches, I mean, seriously, you knew by Survivor Series what the match was.
Mm-hmm.
Batista and Triple H, which was one of the real big successes, or Austin and Rock. I mean, Austin and Rock, we knew for months. Hogan and Randy Savage and Hogan and Warrior, we probably knew for close to a year.
You're all sure.
You know, so Randy Savage and Hogan, we did know for a year. So it's like, you know, this is when we're okay. Tomorrow we're going to go, okay, so who's Orton going to wrestle? And that's well and good. You know, I guess it's going to be Triple H.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like.
But it's like a, that's like a, you know, now we got a 5 week build for Mania, which is supposed to be, you know, the 3 month build show.
Right, right.
So yeah. You know, but I mean, the thing is also is now as we got to figure out. You know, it's almost like Mania is not that important because we just switched the title twice. So switching titles is no big deal. And the week after Mania is the draft. So the draft is actually more important than Mania because that's going to reshuffle everything. So it's kind of like, yeah, Mania is going to do big business, but it's not like it's this be-all, end-all show unless there's something, you know, something being added that
right.
we don't know about.
Right. So coming out of tonight's show, let's talk a little bit about what we might expect. As you mentioned, it looks like Orton and Triple H, I'm guessing, because that gets Triple H back on Raw again, coming to Stephanie's rescue to kind of to take out Orton. But the other side, with the Edge now winning the belt tonight and him not even being, you know, the Raw guy, that's the one that seems to be a little bit up in the air as to who you'll pick to work with him.
Probably Cena, just because you got to have Cena in the main match.
Yeah. So does Edge become a regular member of Raw? Cena certainly doesn't go to SmackDown.
No, not right away. Maybe after. You know, I mean, I could see a lot of shuffling. You know, as far as after Mania, but no, not before Mania. Because if they were to shuffle Cena before Mania, it's like why have a draft?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right. Sure. Exactly. Well, that shuffling anybody really before the draft would be kind of silly.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to me because the one thing that I could say from last year's draft that when we look back is that I thought the Jeff Hardy move was a big plus. I thought that the Triple H move was probably, you know, not as big as I expected. The Jim Ross move, I think, in the long run was a negative, even though it was a negative. And the biggest negative was the Mysterio move, so I'm wondering how many of those they're going to correct.
Right, right. So I'm guessing then, if they don't want to do any shifting, so does Edge become part of Raw now until after Mania and the draw?
I figure he probably goes on both shows.
He just goes back and forth.
Well, okay. Yeah, but then here's the thing. Triple H is probably going to have to go to Raw because, you know, I mean, I would think that they want Orton and Triple H built up on Raw as opposed to SmackDown because they see Raw as the big show mm-hmm. for the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So maybe if Edge stays on SmackDown, then Cena's going to have to start going on SmackDown or Edge is going to have to work both shows.
See, now, and to me, this is just, if they constantly have to do this shuffling now, it really makes the draft look silly.
Well, that's why last year's draft didn't do a good rating as compared to, like, you know, the original draft.
Right.
It did phenomenal ratings because people, you know, let's face it, what group is Miz and Morrison on? They're on all three shows all the time.
That's true. We have seen them on all three, yeah. It's and I understand the idea you need to freshen up the product and, you know, create matches, but the idea of guys being exclusive to every show seems to have gone out the window a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let's see what else. Oh, I guess the other stuff we got to talk about. What's the status with, you know, Flair and Mickey Rourke and Jericho? I mean, it certainly looks like the Austin thing too is not gonna happen now. Certainly not with Orton.
I don't know. I mean, you'd think they need something. I don't think it's gonna be Flair wrestling.
Well, it shouldn't be. Hopefully, it shouldn't be. But I mean, there was a lot of talk of Austin wrestling, and from the way things played out tonight, I don't see where you bring Austin in.
The only person he could work with is Orton.
Yeah, and I don't think it's headed that way.
And
really, that storyline doesn't make a lot of sense anyways for
Vince
to bring
Stephanie's,
in his...
Stephanie's mad. He put Shane in the hospital and Vince in the hospital. She calls up Austin. Yeah, that's as good as you're going to get.
I mean, isn't there some talk that perhaps they acknowledge the Trips Stephanie relationship and she's like bringing her, you know,
Absolutely. Good chance of that. I mean, that, you know, I had heard they were going to acknowledge that. Jeez, it was like right after Mania they had made the decision to do it, and then, you know, we've had a year where it hasn't been done. So yeah, I could absolutely see, you know, that match, and I think that if Austin doesn't wrestle, it's the best match. But yeah, it's the best. I'm just not like I look at that and I just go Triple H and Randy Orton, John Cena against Edge, WrestleMania, and it's just like, you know, I mean, it's sort of like the same thing you get every month.
Yeah, there's nothing there yet that's really setting it up. It needs that. Especially, this is number 25. Like, to me, I don't know what the situation is with Hogan, but as far as I'm concerned, Hogan should be on this pay-per-view.
Well, of course he should, but you know how that goes. I mean, you know, let's face it, Hogan and Austin probably should be, you know, the special attraction match on the show, but, you know, if Austin doesn't want to wrestle him, you can't put a gun to Austin's head, you know, and Austin doesn't need it, you know. So if Austin ain't wrestling, then...
But outside of putting Austin in a match with, a legendary character of that sort, what else would you do with him at this point? Like, I mean, I don't know what else you would do.
You mean with Hogan or with Austin?
With Austin. Like, if you don't put him with someone...
Or, yeah, I mean, Austin, Austin to me, you know, it should be Orton. You know, I mean, like, business-wise, it should be Hogan, but he's so negative on that, I never really thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
To me, Orton, I mean, you can put him with Michaels, but, I don't see that. I mean, it can be done, it'll be all right, but that's been done before. And there's something about that match which, to me, it's like then you have to have a great match, and then you're setting yourself up for disappointment.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Michaels coming out of the pay-per-view tonight, did it look to you like that storyline's going to still carry on, because with the idea of his wife smacking JBL, I could see JBL coming out and saying, "Hey, you should have been DQ'd for that, and I technically should have won the match, and you're still my employee."
Maybe, I don't know. I saw it as the end of the storyline and a real flat ending too. To me, it was like, "Wow, that was what we got." I mean, that storyline to me, it just didn't. I thought I was liking it in some ways, but it was real clear to me when I went to the TV on Monday night that the storyline wasn't over at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, and Dave, you saw it tonight. That crowd was hot. Like, for the SmackDown Chamber match, they were going ballistic. And during a lot of the Michaels JBL, they were quite quiet.
They were only into the last 47 seconds
of the match. Yeah, that's right. That's
right. After the slap, they were into, like, that last final sprint. But up until that point... They weren't, but, you know, a lot of that was Sean didn't have a good match. He's looking like he's really hurting, you know, and he is.
Yeah.
And JBL, let's face it, JBL stinks.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's a great talker, but ever since he's come back in the ring, he hasn't been good in the ring.
No, he's been bad. Although, could he have been any worse than Kozlov was tonight?
No. but the one thing I'll say for Kozlov is that I thought that match was still really great. Except for the period where Kozlov was
absolutely.
In.
Absolutely. That match was smartly booked. Unless Kozlov was throwing a punch or sandbagging Undertaker, because
that was hilarious.
That one spot looked like that was supposed to be the finish with him taking a tombstone, and he sandbagged Undertaker on it.
Oh, but he was always in the wrong spot.
Yep.
Just like, you know, like when Jeff Hardy did the whisper in the wind, and he's too close, and it was just like every spot he was in looked terrible, and, you know, he can't sell, and, you know, I think that experiment, I mean, he's got the great face, but it just never, he just couldn't deliver the goods.
I think he might be getting the good luck in all your future endeavors notice soon.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, because what do you do with him? He's not improving. I remember when the first time they brought him into, they brought him some house shows in the Bay Area, which was when they first had him. And it was one of those guys like Kali, when you see him and you go, like, you know, no matter what, I don't think this guy's ever going to be any good. And and it looks like that one's right.
Yeah, unfortunately, for sure. And they've tried so hard. They've pushed him to the limit. They put him in high-profile matches like this. Nothing works.
Yeah.